Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast episode 93. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
93 episodes, Scott, and we're finally doing something we've never done before on Forecast.
Yeah, this is a little scary. We're actually having one of our guests was on our very first episode of Forecast, and we've always talked about the idea of what it would really mean to have a returning guest. I still don't know what it means, but I'm really happy to have him back.
I think it means that the universe will fold in on itself and explode.
All right.
Get to that mystery guest in a moment. But first, a fresh guest. I'm a big fan, actually. John Anilio, sci-fi songwriter. Now, it's written in here that your music sounds like John Mayer, Weezer, and James Taylor playing Dungeons & Dragons together on their iPhones. Is that an apt description?
I think that's accurate.
Yeah.
I do write songs about science fiction, fantasy, and other nerdy things. And, I don't know if I'm a huge fan of John Mayer or Weezer or James Taylor, but
I don't know who wrote that. They just wrote it in my... Okay, you wrote that. Okay, good.
Yeah, I actually wrote that. I figured that was the best description I can come up with, so there you have it.
I'm a big fan of George R. R. Martin Is Not Your Bitch, one of your songs. also, NaNoWriMo.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Big inspiration for me when I did NaNoWriMo a few times. And Summer Glau, I think, is a great song as well.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that. I actually co-wrote that one with a guy named John DiNardo who does sfsignal.com. So, yeah, give credit where credit's due.
And you've got a new free song that I saw you pumped out today.
Oh, yeah. It was actually my Halloween song from last year. I have a new song from last year, but I'm putting it out again this year. It's called A Stormtrooper for Halloween. It is a mostly true story about how I dressed up as a stormtrooper for Halloween when I was about 5 years old. So that's for free. That's up on my site, johnanilio.com. So you can just go and get that for free.
Now we will reveal our mystery guest from episode one.
Not the girl.
Forecast. The Phantom Menace of Forecasts. Mr. Len Peralta is back on the show. Len.
Hey, what's going on,
how does it feel,
guys,
to be the first repeat guest?
You know, when I heard that I was coming back as a repeat guest, first of all, I was honored because I know that's not in your vernacular to want to have, or your playbook, I should say, to have a guest on again.
My BlackBerry playbook. No, it's not.
A vernacular playbook. Well, then I thought, well, someone must have backed out or something because, I'm honored to be here, but, hopefully I can do you guys proud and do a good forecast, predict the future even closer than I did the first time.
So. Now, as I recall, Len, you were all doom and gloom on episode one. You had some pretty gnarly vision of the future that was depressing all of us to tears.
Yeah, you know what? It was funny because I was getting ready for the show today, and I started thinking about some predictions, and every one of the predictions I came up with was kind of doom and gloom.
Short-term prediction was end of the world in 2012.
Yeah.
which almost made us stop the show right
first,
then.
Yeah, what a great first prediction for the very first show.
Long-term prediction, rejection of technology, working our way back to the techless ways of life.
Right.
And the crazy-ass prediction was we would reanimate the dead.
Yes.
So, we will see.
We'll see what happens here.
We'll see if Len's view of the future has become more or less positive. I wanted to have
dystopian.
Len back.
Dystopian, as I like the word.
I wanted to have Len back selfishly because the Geek a Week trading card series that he made, available at thinkgeek.com, series two has my card in it, and we really need people to continue to buy it.
And it was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool experience at Dragon Con. I was actually with you at Dragon Con, and someone came up to you and handed you your card to sign, which I thought was very cool.
I've actually got to sign one or two of them since then, but that was the first time anyone gave me a trading card. of myself to sign.
Loved it. Love it.
Once in a lifetime. Well, maybe twice. Let's move on to our predictions from listeners. This one comes from Divine Sandwich Maker. He says, I have a short-term prediction. Spielberg will succumb to Lucasitis, and within the next 10 to 15 years, we will see digitally remastered copies of Jurassic Park 1 and 2. Without Michael Crichton to object, Spielberg will go wild. These new copies will have the dinosaurs retouched so that most of them are feathery, especially the Ultraraptor Velociraptor, with new vocalizations. The character of John Hammond will have a proper Scottish accent, and Jeff Goldblum's awesome stammer will be edited out for no reason, making the character of Ian Malcolm far less cool.
Wow. So people forget, and our fine listener, our writer here, has forgotten that Spielberg kind of blazed the trail for his good friend George Lucas by swapping guns out for walkie-talkies in E.T., which was a hideous move to make. And people see the, who shot first thing as more egregious. But I would argue that Spielberg started it all. And I think that he is probably capable of much more in the way of these sorts of crimes against his own films. I don't know what that'll mean. I don't know if this exact prediction will be true. But let's hope he's wrong, because I think that would be a travesty. Certainly, Crystal Skull in itself, which was a combination of both these two men in their later years, was already a sign that things were going south. So I hope he's wrong. Yeah, and they're doing it again. So we'll see how that all folds out. But he's already been doing it, and I can't watch E.T. unless there's guns in those FBI's hands. I can't do it when they're just carrying walkie-talkies around.
Yeah,
it's just ridiculous.
We see Han shot first T-shirts, but we don't see the FBI had guns T-shirts.
Right. It doesn't roll off the tongue. But it looks pretty weird when you see these guys aiming, literally aiming their walkie-talkies at an alien in a bike before it flies. It just feels wrong and terrible. And the day has come where we must at least drag out that atrocity as equally as we do George Lucas's terrible, terrible feats with his own films.
John, do you think that Spielberg will go redo old movies, whether it's Jurassic Park or anything else?
I think it's highly possible. Yeah, I think so. I mean, as Scott pointed out, the whole thing with the E.T. and the guns. And, I think a lot of times creative types, I think most people always feel like their projects are never finished. You always just have to kind of let them go. And fortunately or unfortunately, with, all of our digital editing technology in every field, it's now a lot easier to go back and do that. And I think it's hard sometimes for these guys to let it go. And I hope he doesn't, though. I really hope he doesn't do that.
One can hope. Len, you're a fan of film and good storytelling. What do you think about the idea of Spielberg saying, maybe he'll go back and change the mashed potato sculpture and Close Encounters into something fat-free or something stupid like that? What do you think?
We all know that all these directors talk to one another, and they're all friends. So I think, yes, well, Scott, you mentioned it. He's already kind of tinkering already. So I think, yes, you're going to see it, not to the degree that Lucas is doing it. I think Lucas is just insane. But just like the mad genius who has too much time on his hands and a lot of money. I think that Spielberg has a little bit more, old school film in him to let it stand the way it is. And I hope he doesn't go back, and I hope he doesn't do, like you said, with Close Encounters or even Schindler's List. I'd hate to see that.
Yeah.
How's he going to change the ending of Schindler's List?
Colorize it or something,
Yeah, just make the girl with the black and white dress or something dumb like that. But I think if they're going to do it, they should go all out. So what it should be is, let's mix the two. Let's have, let's say Schindler's List, and every occasionally when something terrible happens, have Darth Vader pop into screen kind of Mortal Kombat style and go, no, and just mix them. I think that would be, that's the movie I want to see, to be honest.
All right, I can't add anything to that. If you have a prediction of your own, email it to us, forecastpodcast@gmail.com, or post it up at our blog, forecastpodcast.com. Let's start the predicting. It's the short-term predictions. These are things you think will happen sooner rather than later. And John, we'll have you as our new member of the show kick it off. What do you got for us?
Well, my short-term prediction is a return to the patronage of the arts. In recent years, you've seen Well, and really just in the past year, you're starting to see a lot of artists and creative types use a service like Kickstarter. Kickstarter is one that I think most people know about at this point, or a lot of people know about. And a lot of people are having really good success with it. And for instance, Neil Gaiman and Amanda Palmer, they went out and did a tour where I guess Neil was reading and Amanda was, you know, playing her music. And they raised a ton of money for that. And, you know, you have some other people too, some authors that I know, Merle Lafferty, who is an independent author who's raised, I believe, about $20,000 for one of her book series to go out. Tobias Bukel is in the middle of a Kickstarter project. And I think what I'm noticing about this, which I don't think has been reported so much, is that it's not so much that it's a lot of these little donations. It's not a lot of, although there is a significant portion of that, but it seems like a high percentage of the, you know, sort of finished dollar amount is the people that are picking the absolute deluxe package where they, you know, sort of pledge 500 or 1,000 or more towards the project. And this is really, in some ways, kind of a return to the way the arts used to be. You know, arts used to be where you had a composer or a visual artist, and, you know, a rich duke or king or somebody would say, like, I think your music is important and I'm going to support you and I want you just to make all the great music that you can. It's only really been in the past 100 years that you've had, you know, sort of record companies and people buying it. It was always sort of the patrons that kind of kept the arts going. And I'm seeing this shift and it's already kind of happening. So that's my prediction. I think that's where things are going in the arts.
So that's interesting. And in a second, I want to hear Len talk about his recent experience with Kickstarter as a kind of form of this. But before that, I have a stereotype in my head of, say, I don't know, the early 1900s. Let's say the year is 1913 and we're in a city like Chicago or Boston.
The year is 1913.
Exactly. And everything's grainy and super sped up. And so in that world that I have set up, I have the stereotype of a lady who's got a big umbrella and a huge dress, who is just so thrilled to be the patron of the arts. And she has bankrolled this play, which has come to town and has, you know, been in all the papers. And is that the future? Is that a thing where we start to see people with a lot of money, they swoop in and they sponsor a summer tour of a concert or something like that for some given amount of time and kind of, you know, boost the sales of records or CDs or digital downloads or whatever it is in the future? Am I on the right track?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think it's more of people that maybe have a little bit of extra income that really feel like one particular artist speaks to them and they really want to support that. I think it could be sort of the mega rich that do it. I think that's certainly possible. But I think it's more of people that really believe in somebody and really want to see them keep creating that art. You know, in my own experience of this, I haven't done a Kickstarter campaign, but I've done a lot of pay what you want kind of things. And I notice, and I'm always surprised, there's always people that most people will take it for free, but a lot of people will overpay significantly. And so I think it's more of sort of a certain percentage of people that maybe have some discretionary income that want to put it towards the arts. But, you know, I think umbrellas are cool too, Scott. I think we can all get our fancy umbrellas.
Parasols.
And monocles parasols and things like that. Yes. Sure. Yeah. Great idea. So Len, how do you feel about this stuff? What is the future of helping artists and musicians find a new path?
Well, it's just so ironic that John brings up Kickstarter. My Kickstarter just ended on Sunday, being like 150%, something like that, 150% funded, which was just amazing to me. I love Kickstarter. I think it's a great idea. I think it's twofold. First off, it allows someone to do kind of what you guys were saying, which is, you don't even have to be a rich person to do it. You can go in and you can commission something and feel like you're part of the art. I think that was one thing that would really made what I really like about the Kickstarter project that I've seen. And something that I've experienced personally is that people who have a little bit of money can still feel like they're a part of it. And it's also a great way for artists to raise the money, you know, with the current banking situation and with loans and everything else. It's just impossible or virtually impossible to raise funds like this. So through a bank. So this is just a great way to do it. I think John is right on the money as far as saying that this is the future. This is how things are going to get done. And I would extend that out even farther. I'm waiting to see a Kickstarter that isn't just arts related, or a Kickstarter is sort of a site that helps fund businesses, that helps fund different things that aren't arts related. That's what I'm looking forward to, because I think this model is working. And one thing that's amazing to me is the pre-order model that I used for my Kickstarter was just I don't know why I didn't think about it sooner, and it just was a really great way to raise funds to get the stuff that I want to get out there. And I totally agree with John on this.
Now, Len, I think some people are using Kickstarter for other things as well, because I believe I saw a couple months back, I think it was a funding of a real specialized preschool that was sort of being privately funded, and they did a big Kickstarter campaign to help sort of launch this preschool. So I think you are seeing it in other areas as well, yeah. Not just the arts.
I think you're right. I know there are certain Kickstarter projects. For example, I met a gentleman out in Boston a couple months ago who funded these little lock picks that he was making. These, he's a professional lock picker. And he actually he used the Kickstarter money to actually, machine and tool that stuff. So, yeah, so you're seeing some of that. But I want to see it for, specifically for building businesses. And I think it'll be really interesting once we see things start moving in that direction. I think a lot of people in the country are looking for alternate ways of funding. And if someone believes in something that you're doing, why not? Why not open it up to the public and see what can happen?
It's interesting, too, because it takes it away from the individual person that's sort of flipping the bill for everything, and it turns it into this crowdsource thing that only sort of the environment of today provides. And this would have never been possible in my 1913, scenario. So that's the one thing I really like about it is, like you say, it's the many can contribute and feel a part of it and have that personal interaction that in 1913 only Lady with a Huge Umbrella could have. And I think that's a key difference between then and now.
Yeah, it was interesting that you bring this up. Jonathan Colton posted up today the final sort of 5-year-ago look back at his thing a week. And he had several paragraphs about how he's been able to make that work. I mean, he points out it's a simple truth that for sale competes with free in the digital realm. That's just the way it is. We don't get to decide if it's good for us or not, because we've already demonstrated that this is the way we want things to work. He says, in my experience, for sale wins often enough that it doesn't matter what's happening on the free side. And so this idea of providing new ways for people to vote with their dollars and to support things is not only just a good idea, I think it's essential to continuing the model of people being able to make their living at this. Although he does go to point on, he's like, music isn't going away. It was here long before we figured out a way to make money from it, and we'll be here at least until the day we all upload our brains into the giant universe-shaped computer and disappear. he points out the music business is an accident, a side effect, an unintended consequence. Music comes from humans. And I think that's true of not just music, but video and art and pretty much all creative enterprises. We have an impulse to do them first, and then we get attracted to the idea of how can we make this what we do? How can we make this be our living? And the internet provides a much better tool for exploring those different options, while at the same time just wrecking previous models. So,
and it's the socialism I can get behind. You know what I mean? Like it's socialism that people are.
Well, it's
are
not
deciding
socialism
to,
though, because it's free. I mean, there's no government coming in and saying you have to support the arts. You're free
exactly.
to give your money wherever you want.
Exactly. That's what I mean. It is not the traditional political way of thinking about socialism, or even the actual form of socialism. But it's this. It is the social response to something people like and want to support. And I love that. I love that somebody can get behind Geek a Week or 1,000 other projects that are available right now on Kickstarter, or a number of other sites or a number of other projects or blogs or whatever it is. We just finally have this way of doing it. And so John's future, rings true to me. I think it'll come in the mass. It'll come more in mass than it will in as far as individuals. But it'll be really interesting to see what this all looks like in about 10 years from now.
All right, Len, here's your chance to give us a new short-term prediction. Your last one was that we would all die. What's this one?
Yeah, well, you know what? I guess I'm just a gloom and doom kind of guy, and I'm not going to disappoint here. My short term prediction is kind of dark. I have to be honest with you. I've been watching this Occupy Wall Street thing happening in New York and all around different cities, and it's kind of disjointed. I can't really get a bead on what people are upset about. There's all kinds of things people are upset about. But I think that the main thing that I get out of it is that people are upset.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, my short-term prediction is that we are on the verge of a 21st century civil war. Pick your poison, man. I mean, I think, you know, we are... We have so many different thoughts going on, and with the internet, we get people. We can get things out quickly, and mobilize people, and I think I hate to say this, but I think that we're on the verge of something where there's a huge division happening within the country right now. And I think it could come to something that we saw later in the 1800s with the Civil War. I think we're on that verge. We're on the cusp. I don't want to say it's going to happen, but I can say, I'd hate to see it happen. But I think it's very, very possible that there could be a civil war here in this country.
This is what I love about Len, is that by all intents and purposes, he's one of the jolliest little guys I know personally, right? Like, he's so optimistic about everything. He is just so happy to just a go-getter and all that. But his predictions are just, like, so in the mud. So here's what I would throw back at you. So you feel like social networking and these kinds of technologies and these kinds of, access that people have now, that will fuel this revolution, at least until the servers are blown up, or what? Is that part of this scenario?
I think that gives an opportunity for people to mobilize really quickly. I mean, I think you're seeing it a lot over the past couple months with the riots and in London and things like that. The Occupy Wall Street thing, it was interesting to me from a standpoint that, I was reading about it and I'm like, I don't even really know what these people are upset about. But it doesn't even matter what they're upset about. I think people are just upset in general, and all it takes is just a little bit of social engineering, so just to kind of channel some of that energy, and it could be pretty ugly. And I hate to think about that. That this is my vision of the dystopian future here in the 21st century. I actually, you said I'm a jolly person, and I like to try to stay jolly. But I just see, it could be really bad. And with an election year coming up, it could get even worse and scary. And it's like, I'm not looking forward to the next election year. It's just not good.
What are the sides going to be in this civil war? Or is it going to be like all kinds of factions?
Well, that's the thing. It's pick your poison. I mean, there's all kinds. Just pick anything. Anti-bullying or gay marriage or what, whatever. Anything that where there are two divided
carrots.
Sides. Carrots. Loud, angry things.
Carrots.
Whipped mashed potatoes versus, just regular home fries. Just pick your poison. But there are so many disparate ideas. And maybe it's because I'm on Twitter and I see all these different people talking, they're just coming from two totally different standpoints, and that's only going to get more louder as we enter the election year next year.
And part of it is, Len, I believe anyway, and this, I don't want to speak for Len, but I think you and I are fathers, and I think we think a different way about this stuff. I think this stuff stresses us out and makes us worry about the future of our kids. I totally feel that way when it comes to future events. We're not that far off from our belief system, but I think John probably has something to say musically, perhaps. I don't know, musically or not, but what do you think about a future?
John, can you answer the musical question, are we going to all die in a civil war?
Yeah.
I didn't say we're all going to die. I say we're on the verge of one.
Well, I don't have any musical perspective on it other than, Elaine, I was sort of thinking about that again the other day because I was watching, my wife and I will watch that pawn star show on Netflix, the one where, you know, they have the pawn shop and people bring in, they have all this Civil War stuff. And I got to thinking about the Civil War and I was thinking, you know, it's so crazy that our country went through that. And, yeah. You know, I was thinking about that now, too. I live in New Jersey, you know, which is a blue state. And I would definitely consider myself, you know, pretty much a blue state kind of person. And even in New Jersey, you will have like crazy, like, you know, well, I shouldn't say that, but I'm just like, the Tea Party people and the impeach Obama people. And it kind of blows my mind, like, that, you know, that as Len said, that there's such a divide between people. And it is a little scary when you think about it, you know, that could that actually happen again? And you know what? You know, stranger things have happened in the world, and of course I would hate to see that happen, and I'm a father as well, and I hope that's not the world that my son grows up in.
Yeah,
but
you know, when you think about the Civil War, it is pretty amazing. We're just in Atlanta over the Labor Day weekend, and it's just amazing to me that, like, think about the history of that city. And how much they were a part of the Civil War, and it's not even, we're not even living any close, you know, it's not even like we're even close to that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like such a long time ago, but it really isn't that long of a time ago when you really think about it. So yeah, I hope we never go through that stuff again either.
All right. But you predict it nonetheless.
I do predict it nonetheless. Because I can kind of, you kind of see these things, you know, it's, I don't know. It's scary.
We're going to take a break from our doom to let you know about Netflix. You're going to need something to take off the impending Civil War. And what better than to watch a documentary about the Civil War streaming from Netflix. Netflix.com/twit. Free trial, 30 days free. Watch all the TV shows, movies you want. Fiddle while Rome burns in the best possible way. Get it for free, or maybe undermine your enemies. Give them Netflix.com. Tell them about Netflix.com/twit so they stay inside watching all the great movies and TV shows and then forget to go take up arms in the streets. It could be your weapon to save us all. Netflix.com/twit.
There it is.
A 30-day free trial. We thank them for their support of Forecast. Let's move on to our long-term predictions. And
I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry to bring you up.
You know what? Let's just get it out of the way, Len. In 100 years or so, are we still going to be here?
I hope so. I hope so. I know I'm not going to be, but hopefully,
are you sure?
Hopefully,
no singularity, huh?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe maybe one of my other predictions may answer that question. So
A little tease ahead. But your long-term prediction. What do you got for us?
My long-term prediction, you know, we talked about E.T. at the beginning of the show. And I think that my long-term prediction is that we are seriously, we are going to have some sort of meaningful, intelligent alien contact. And I'm not saying, you know, it's... just like from the movies, you know, I'm not saying that we're going to find like a water source or here's a plant. Yeah. You know, I think we're going to have some sort of meaningful connection with an alien source. And I don't think it's going to be like, oh, they're going to give us all the answers or anything like that. I think it's going to be like, we're actually going to be able to talk to them. And I think we're on the verge of that. I think that's going to be coming. That's my long-term prediction. Probably not in the next 100 years or so, but you know, I can see that happening. I can see that happening. So
you say a meaningful connection, something that furthers human understanding. You know, sort of a first contact Star Trek kind of deal,
I don't think they're going to impart any information to us. They're not going to impart any, you know, like significant information about where we are. But it's going to be some sort of meaningful interchange where we're going to be able to talk to them, you know, equally be amazed. But that's about it. You know what I mean? It's not like they're going to say, and we are here to destroy you, or and we are here to show you how to make whipped potatoes.
Yes, it's a cookbook.
It's but intelligent alien contact. I would say that's probably going to be my long-term prediction.
So I hope you're right about the meaningful part. I mean, what I really hope is that they've got, like, I always think if we visit some other planet, we'll have some built-in prime directive style commitments, right? That we're not going to mess with their culture, or we're not going to try to take over. We're not there to take their resources necessarily. We're there to negotiate peace or to set up a new system of communication across the stars or whatever. I hope that that's what that represents instead of the thing we all fear, which is they, you know, show up and see that we've got lots of copper left and blow us up for it.
or conversely, we go there and we think, hey, you know what? We could probably move here and build some great high rises or something. You know,
unobtainium.
Right.
Yes, wait, unobtainium.
So before I throw it to John, how do you, we're talking just weird heads like Star Trek, or are they fully weird looking aliens that we can't, that we don't, they don't have any kind of human form? Are they human looking? What's your prediction there?
You know, I think I'd hate to make any sort of ideas, you know, but everybody has that idea of what an alien should look like with the big bulging black eyes and the huge head. I don't even want to go that route. I think it could even, you know, that's the other thing. It could be just like a feeling or something, or I don't know. It's so, but they're actually, I would say that my thought would that they actually be physical manifestations. What they look like, I don't even want to try to say. That's not my job.
Cauliflower.
It's not your place.
It's not my place to say what they'll look like.
All right. Well,
in terms of form, I would say I would think it's going to be, you know, Gwawled, you know, like the snake in the back of the head. You know, so I would think that's probably your best chance. Or if we're going to have, you know, a more benevolent one, then you would have, you know, your little gray men a la the Asgard. I just got finished watching like all 10 seasons of Stargate over the past year. So I have a lot of Gwawled and Asgard on the head. But that was a very, in terms of like something like that happening, I thought that was just a very clever way to sort of, you know, get to all these planets and everything. It's like, hey, we can go anywhere, every planet, every week. And I just love that show. And, you know, but I'm going to go Gwawled. That's what I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. That show is great, by the way. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with sitting down and watching all 10 seasons of Stargate SG-1. Or I guess it's that combined with, did you do Atlantis as well, or just SG-1?
Yeah, I did. I actually did it all backwards. I did it because I started watching.
Universe?
I did Universe first because one of the podcasts that I co-host, we had a Joseph Malazzi, who's one of the producers on Stargate, on it. So I was making sure that I had never watched Stargate before that. So I was watching Universe, and then I went and I watched Atlantis first, and then I did SG-1. Now I'm sort of going back. I did it totally backwards, which is actually not a bad way to do it, because Atlantis references all of the mythology of the Asgard and the ancients and all that. And then it was very, very cool to sort of watch it, you know, sort of spring up, because Stargate did a really good job of introducing things and then building upon it later. So it was very, really interesting to see sort of the first appearance of the Asgard, which you didn't think much of, but then they would sort of bring them back and develop them more. And it was a very like rich tapestry in terms of that kind of thing. So watching it backwards, actually, I thought was a good way to do it.
I totally agree. It's totally unrelated, but that the film is so flimsy, you think, man, is the TV show any good? But it's really, I would put it on kind of, I don't want to break any hearts out there, but it's up there with Star Trek for me in terms of its lore and stuff. Yeah, I mean, they actually have a lot in common, especially the early show.
Yeah, especially
very Star Trek.
The Monster of the Week thing. But when it was on Showtime, the early SG-1s, I agree. Mm-hmm, sure. But so our aliens will come from science fiction shows. That's the best you guys got?
Yeah, I got nothing else.
All right. If that's the case, then we'll move to you, John, for your long-term prediction, the sort of, you know, we'll have flying cars sort of thing. What do you got for us?
All right. Well, mine's not as, as sort of sexy as that. But I can't make a full-time living writing songs about George R.R. Martin yet.
Yet.
But I'm a public school teacher. I teach music in a public school. And I think, just seeing the way things have gone the past few years, I think within 100 years, we may see a radically different education system. I don't know if it's even going to be public schools anymore, to be quite honest with you. And the two reasons that kind of got me thinking about that, number one is just technology. I mean, school education used to be a lot of memorizing facts and memorizing dates and memorizing all sorts of stuff like that. Well, you don't need to memorize anymore. Not everything. Certain things you certainly need to do. But everybody is plugged into a computer or a phone where you can look up anything at any time. So sort of old ways of education aren't relevant anymore in a lot of ways. So that's number one. And the other reason is, you know, you're seeing it all over the place in New Jersey here, not to get political, but you're seeing drastic cuts in some states to public education. And then, you know, the overall feeling that I get is that there is a significant percentage of the population, getting back to Len's Civil War, that just doesn't really support the idea of public education. So if these sort of two things sort of converge, I can just see, and I don't know what education will be. I don't know if it'll be private schools or if it'll be homeschooling, or, you know, maybe there will be just a massive revamping of the public school system. But I think the way it is now is not the way it's going to be.
So do you see more in the way of change happening to just the structure of it, like how cities, communities, states, or whatever run the public education system, or more fundamental to that, meaning the curriculums are upended and taught in a very different way, or radical teaching methods are introduced, homeschooling is more popular, or something like that?
Well, I think in long term, I think, you know, curriculums, and I think it's going to be a total upending of it, because how, you know, public schools used to be, they used to prepare people to work in factories or prepare people to work, you know, specific jobs. And, you know, school systems are kind of still set up that way, but more towards just getting into college. And really, you can't do that anymore, because if you teach a computer system or a software program, well, it's totally different in 5 years. So, you know, it's a lot of on-the-job training. And so really the only thing that you can teach that is a skill that, you know, doesn't change is critical thinking. You know, you need to teach people how to think for themselves, how to solve problems, stuff that could be sort of put into any situation. So I think you'll see schools... I think it's going to be a slow change, but I think it will be geared more towards that rather than specific skills, because those skills change. In the short term, I think you will see quite a bit of a revamping of the public school system, just because there is kind of a, you know, more sort of accountability. There's always more testing. There's you know, a lot of states want more accountability for the teachers in terms of tenure and things like that. So you are seeing much more scrutiny put upon that. And I think a lot of that has to do with the economy. And then when people look at their taxes and realize how much of their taxes go towards education, you know, they want to, you know, they want it to be sort of handled, you know, they want it scrutinized more. But yeah, so long term, I think you will see actual changes to curriculum. And again, I don't know what that is. I mean, I guess, you know, we're going to have to see. But, you know, I think when you think of a lot of great thinkers over the history of human existence, so many of them were not great in school. You know, they didn't fit school. They figured out things on their own. They taught themselves. And now we live in a world where that's easier than ever to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think you're going to see more of that, and, you know, schools will maybe change whether they'll even be school. I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I mean, and for somebody that, you know, makes his living doing that, you know, part of me is somewhat excited about that. I'd like to see a change. I'd like to see, you know, us really, you know, focusing on different elements rather than just, you know, getting test scores.
Yeah, I think I want to believe that you're right. And I think the seeds of that happening are there. Unfortunately, the short-term trend, and I know we're in the long-term prediction, but the short-term trend seems to be to charge more for education and to make it focus on almost vocational things, like especially business degrees. You want to train people to go get jobs, and that's it. And they're cutting out the sort of inessential things that are not necessary, you know. And as a music teacher, you probably face this this threat sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Because those are usually the first programs to come under the target when budget cuts come, because they're considered non-essential.
And yes. I think that's extremely sad. I think you nailed it. Critical thinking is what we need to teach people so that mm-hmm. they can decide for themselves and they can question authority and they can figure out, you know, what their beliefs should be instead of being spoon-fed by ridiculous people in the media who you know, don't know the facts and don't care about the facts and are interested in just pushing an agenda. I hope that's where we get. And I think you may have hinted at the way we get there, which is the ability to go out and learn for yourself. Is becoming yeah. more and more. Things like Khan Academy are out there. OpenU set a record for downloads on iTunes. People are going out and seeking that education on their own. And as education gets more and more expensive, I think we'll actually start to see people pursuing that more often. And Scott and Len, I know you guys as fathers, this is a huge issue for you. Len, you know, where do you see this going? Do you agree with John that we may be headed in that direction?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I do, actually. I think that the public education system does need to be revamped. It's interesting because I come from a different perspective. My wife has started a small school here locally, about 75 students. And I've seen it firsthand. The approach that they're taking to education is a lot more critical thinking, a lot more things that are you know, more music, more you know, just the basic building blocks, and more emphasis on that than some of these other things that I think get in public education. Tend to bring some noise pollution to the education system. So I'm seeing it kind of firsthand over the past couple of years, and it's I'm not saying that this is that what she's doing is the future, but it definitely is a lot different than the education that I think a lot of other students or kids are getting. So yeah, it's an interesting perspective. I can definitely see that happening. To the education system, definitely.
And it kind of feeds into a little bit of Len's fears, because I've noticed anyway, there's a real difference between some of the complacency I see in the public school system that some of my kids are in, and one of my kids is still in a charter school system that is very, how do you put this? It's a very, ideologically, they're on a very straight line, and it bugs me. So it bugs me on that extreme, but also bugs me on the other extreme, which is everybody's just kind of deer, you know, nobody really has a plan. And so I feel like there's that, again, a weird division that's created there, a weird chasm that's created between people, personalities, and politics. And it would be really nice if somehow we could get that middle ground a little more invigorated. I don't know what that means. I don't know where that goes, but yeah, I'm with John that something probably needs to and probably will change here in the next, well, hopefully less than 100 years. Hopefully in the next, hey, if it could happen in the next 5 years, that'd be great for me. Just saying.
Let's move on to our
total revamping yeah. of the education system in 5 years. 5 years.
That too much to ask?
Yeah, we can do that.
Let's move on to our crazy ass predictions. One really far out there forecast, and John, we'll stick with you. What do you got for us?
Well, I'm going total singularity on this. That was always an idea that I never understood, and I read a couple books about it. And you know, the book that I read that kind of got me thinking about it was this one. It's called The Optimist Tour of the Future. It's by a guy named Mark Stevenson. We interviewed him on the Functional Nerds podcast that I co-host, and this just made the sort of the idea of sort of humans melding with machine. It made it seem like, oh yeah, that's happening. That can't not happen. And I don't know how far in the future it is. There are some people that really feel like, oh yeah, in the next 20, 30 years, like that will happen. If you do the whole Moore's Law thing of, you know, our processors getting, you know, twice as fast and, you know, half as cheap every 18 months or whatever the exact figure is, you know, our technology is just going to get to a point where, you know, sort of having some sort of consciousness in them is not such a far-fetched idea. And considering, you know, in terms of so much of our research is put towards the medical profession and towards pharmaceuticals and things like that, you know, we want to live longer. That's just, you know, survival. Everyone wants to survive for as long as they can. So I think this idea of us sort of blending with machines, as far-fetched as it sounds, if you read certain books, certain articles about it, it really is not that far-fetched. I don't think so anyway. So that's my crazy prediction.
All right, it's a common thread on this show. Len, how do you feel about the future melding of human and machine? You've got to have some doomsday thoughts here.
I think you're seeing, you know, with some surgeries and some medical breakthroughs, I think you're starting to see man become one with machine. I think man is always being one with machine, especially, you know, with smartphones and things like that. I think, you know, not like physically one with machine, but I can't live without my smartphone is what I'm saying. I actually think...
Stop tutoring us and telling us what you think.
I actually think
that... But this
that,
is where it starts, is what you're saying, right? This is where it
begins. Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's as far-fetched as we would want to believe. Now, I think you're getting into kind of like... I mean, you see bionic arms and things like that, and people who have complete, new... I mean, even like knee surgery and stuff like that, replacement knees and stuff, it's sort of man and machine melding. So I agree.
Yeah, there you go. So singularity, done.
Done.
Not a problem. Not that crazy after all, John. let's move over to you then. You hinted at singularity earlier on. Is that what's...
I was looking at my crazy ass prediction here and was kind of like, oh, this is crazy, because I thought, you know, based on my long-term prediction, I could kind of make a joke about it. I have two. Okay, the first one is, because we have meaningful contact with aliens, the crazy ass prediction is that there will be an alien rape court case that will make top news.
Wow.
Someone's going to be raped by an alien.
Alien sexual assault?
Yes, alien sexual assault.
That's disturbing, Len.
It is really disturbing. How did you think I felt when I came up with that?
I know. I can't even imagine. You know what? This is the plot to that alien nation.
Actually, isn't that what every UFO abduction case alleges?
Yes.
Anyway,
yes. Well, right, exactly. And but now, see, it's going to
be
because we are living among aliens way, way in the future. They will, you know, there will be some sort of rape case that involving alien beings, you know, that sort of thing. So that's my really, really super crazy ass prediction.
So we'll take him to court. There'll be a whole like public, you know, display with this. Yeah. It'll be a big thing. Wow.
Yeah, it'll be like an OJ thing once again. You know, like people are on the side of the alien. People are on the side of whoever it is got assaulted. You know, it's going to be a big mess. It's going to be a total mess.
I liked it better reanimating the dead.
No. Okay, so forget about that. Okay, so my other prediction was that the crazy ass prediction is Hollywood is done. Hollywood is gone. We won't even need them anymore. It's all going to be user-generated content for everything, for your major multi-million dollar movies, your television shows. Everything will be user-generated.
Everything will be user-generated. So no more big budget stuff.
No more big budget. I'd say that, you know, I mean, that's the thing. The technology is catching up. I think you're going to start seeing just... Why even have Hollywood? I mean, some really amazing things are just coming out of the technology that people can use. I just think that they're a done deal.
I like this one better.
Yeah.
This kind of goes with what you were talking about earlier, John.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you are just seeing, you know, what I've seen over the past couple of years when I've been doing the kind of music that I'm doing now is that, you know, people don't want to just consume. They want to create. They want to be a part of, like Len said earlier, that, you know, even, you know, with some of the projects that Len has done, it's people get behind it because they want to be a part of it. People don't just want to sit there and passively consume something. And I think more and more, that's what people are doing. So if you really extrapolate what's kind of going on now, where everybody has a blog and everybody has a podcast. Not everybody, but a lot of people. If you have something to say, it's very easy to say it. And I think everybody who does have something to say, they should have a blog. They should have a podcast. Even if two people listen to it or two people read it, that over, you know, isn't that better than just having, you know, three people or three channels that tell us all what to do, which is what I think we all grew up with. We all were passive consumers because that's all there was. Everybody wants to, you know, sort of express themselves. And I think that the best art and the best things and all of these Kickstarter projects that are kind of the most successful ones are the ones where people get to feel a part of it. People get to contribute to it, not just financially, but in some sort of creative way as well.
Yeah, the talent truly gets to rise to the top on its own merit. No offense, Tom.
Thank you.
But I like that. That's the thing I like about being a cartoonist. What I love about being a podcaster. It's what I love about all this stuff is that, you know, I get to be, it's all based on the work and that's it. You judge it based on that. You don't judge it based on who I knew and when I knew him and how easy it was to get into some small gate that thousands are getting rejected from every day or whatever. You know, the old way, I think, does not represent the future. So in this case, Len, that's an optimistic future. And I support your final choice to have an optimistic freaking prediction on this show.
Well, nice there's still going to be alien rape, but I'm going to say there's not going to be a big Hollywood movie made out about it.
Great.
There's no big Hollywood movie made out about it.
That's awesome.
Few people. I think it's long past time to move on to four questions.
Oh, my gosh, four questions. That's where we ask our guests four questions, rapid fire style. They are not allowed to think too hard about it. They have to answer from the gut. And I'm going to start with my questions for Mr. Leonard Peralta of Cleveland, Ohio. Lenny, are you ready?
Yes, I am.
All right, here we go. What happens when there are no more geeks to match up with weeks?
I will turn into a bowl of mashed potatoes.
Okay. The mashed potato thing is a weird thread through this episode. Next up, who would you rather have ruling the future, apes or skunk apes?
Skunk apes.
Always. Man, you knew the right answer.
Good call.
Third, when the whole country is once again connected by trains, only this time high-speed trains, what will be the train that leaves your hometown of Cleveland every morning? What will that be called?
The Metro Plug.
Okay, good.
I thought that was going to turn into a story problem. But a train leaving Cleveland going at 100 kilometers per hour.
I'm going to take the Metro Plug, the MP. You're going to get on the MP from Cleveland to LA.
I hate the MP. It's always so smelly.
It's always late. And then finally, if Taco Bell is not the restaurant of the future, which do you prefer, KFC or Applebee's?
Intriguing.
Applebee's.
really?
All restaurants are going to become Applebee's?
Unfortunately. Because
usually that C is a D on KFC, and it's yes. That's an old jawbone story, but yeah, that's why I brought that up.
KFD, right.
All right, well, Applebee's it is. Congratulations, Len. You have passed four questions again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
it. Nice job.
All right, John, we move over to you. Are you sitting comfortably?
I am.
Good, then we will begin. Question number one. When will the next George R. R. Martin book come out?
I'm going to say 5 years.
5 years?
Yeah. You know, I want to give him some wiggle room.
Will that make him our bitch? No, it still won't. question number two. Will Summer Glau ever fade into autumn?
No, absolutely not.
She shines forever?
Yes.
Question number three. How long can National Novel Writing Month go on? Or will it ever end?
As an institution?
As an institution.
I mean,
obviously it goes on for a month at a time, but I mean, like...
Yeah. I was going to say 30 days. No, I think it will go on for a long time. I did it, and I'm not a writer. I was just so inspired to do it, and I did it twice and finished it, and it's not very good. But I think it's really captured a lot of people's imagination. I think it'll just keep going.
Excellent. And question number four, how will the universe end?
In a fiery ball.
Fiery ball. Fire. You're a fiery ball man.
Yes. I'll go fiery.
Not the constant, the cold death, the constant expansion.
No, I'm going to go heat. I'm going to go.
You're going to go heat death. You know, it's more exciting.
Yeah, I think so.
Makes for a better movie. Better documentary. Excellent. Well, thank you for answering four questions.
Oh, my pleasure.
And thank you both for being on the show. Of course, Len Peralta, your return engagement was fantastic, as we expected. Let folks know what's going on with Geek a Week and the other projects you got going on.
Geek a Week, season two just ended over a Kickstarter. But the good news is that the the rest of the geeks from season one will be available at the end of the year through ThinkGeek. So you can check out everything over at geekweek.net. There'll be two new geeks that I'm working on. So we'll see what happens.
And John Anilio, thank you again. Great having you on. And let folks know where they can find your music and all the other stuff you do online.
Oh, well, they can find all my music at johnanilio.com, J-O-H-N-A-N-E-A-L-I-O. That's the best place to find what I do. I also co-host a podcast called The Functional Nerds, where we interview lots of creative people, but mostly science fiction and fantasy authors. Recently, we had Lev Grossman on the show, the author of The Magicians.
I'm reading The Magicians right now. It's a great book.
He was a great, great guest. So that was the episode last week. So really cool guy. So that we have that going on. And I also do a video blog for Wired.com's Geek Dad blog, where I teach different geeky songs and how to play them on the guitar. So there's that. But yeah, you can get all my music for name your price or for free. So if you just go to johnanilio.com and enter in zero, you can check out some of my music.
Excellent. Thanks, everybody. And Scott Johnson, thank you most of all. Without whom, I could not do this show.
I'm like the Scarecrow in your little version of Wizard of Oz. Yes,
yeah, seriously. That was very much like
it. It was very much. But I had a blast today. It was awesome. You know what today proved to us? We can have a guest back, that it actually works. It's a functional idea. We don't have to just forever banish them from the show. So, Len, we owe you a big thanks for that. And if I would point people's direction to something this week, it would be the fact that I and Tom will be at BlizzCon 2011 this year, this in 2 weeks, at the weekend of the 21st. Of October, and if you are there, come say hi. I've got a big stack of stickers to give people for the instance at theinstance.net, and we're always happy to say hi, so looking forward to that very much.
Maybe I'll bring pockets full of just random old top five prizes that I never gave away.
Perfect.
Give them out to people randomly.
You totally should, and people will take it. They'll be glad to take whatever swag you have. They'll have bags for the swag.
You want an ELR sticker?
Sure, why not? Show's only been off the air for 2 years. Here you go.
The Slytherin sticker. Got an extra. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. Don't forget to leave comments at our website, forecastpodcast.com, and you can email us, forecastpodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.
Tell me 32 years away.
Way.
Way.
All right.
Woo! Great job. Yeah.
Fantastic.
That was fun.
Yes. Hey, Len, you got to come on TMS next week and talk about your Kickstarter thing and how it went.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I have to, I totally forgot to mention 50 versus 50, which is my new thing that I'm working on.
It's What's 50 versus 50?
50 versus 50. I'm starting it up again for this month. It's 50 zombies versus 50 apocalyptic survivors.
Oh,
one of them. You can order them. Go to 50versus50.com.
Excellent. Nice. And,
yeah. John ordered, he talked about it earlier. He ordered a
Captain Six String. Yes. Yes. I asked Len to sort of use my face and sort of put me in a Battlestar Galactica-esque get up with a laser shooting guitar.
Awesome.
So, oh, it's great. You really like captured, like I have that right on my website now, because I think it's like the perfect representation of what I think my music sounds
like. Your inner soul.
Yes. Pretty awesome. Yeah. The zombies versus survivors. I did heroes versus villains, but now zombies versus survivors. It's kind of a different thing. Only be doing it for a little while, and then I think I'll switch back to heroes again. Heroes and villains. But yeah, so cool.
How about tragic heroes and heroic villains?
Ooh, that would be something.
Mm.
Or how I like about heroes and villains. People seem to like the heroes and villains more. Zombies and survivors seems to be a little more esoteric. But
how about the running zombies versus fat slow guys in suspenders? How about that?
or fat zombies versus thin zombies.
See? There's something
that's
there.
I don't know. That's just encouraging body issues amongst zombies.
That is, yeah. That's true.
It's a real problem. It's like some of them just won't eat their brains. They
gray zombies versus blue zombies, you know.
Red zombies.
Racist.